Welcome to Roguecast number 200.
200?
200, 200
what?
Episodes.
No!
So, we've been gone for a couple weeks.
Yes.
To create such a thing as a 200th podcast, you have to kind of...
We spent 3 weeks making this.
That's so not true.
Or there's an alternate version.
There was a comics delay, which screwed up 1 week. And then last week we had inventory, which took forever.
And Nick had death.
Nick had death, and I was exhausted.
But I'm better now.
We did not record last week.
Yeah.
So this week we are here, 200th podcast. We're going to talk about 3 weeks worth of comics.
Yep.
We're going to talk about all the news that's accumulated, which is not a small amount of news.
Yep.
And you might have heard our new theme song. There was a snippet of it at the beginning of this podcast. What I'm going to do as we go over the weeks is probably I'm going to mix in all the podcasts. Jerick Stewart, our buddy, who has been with us as a customer for a long time, has helped out at the store. He is an amateur musician.
Yep. And given that he's done our theme songs so many times, he's like our court musician.
He is, yes. He's our bard.
He's our bard.
He has done 4 versions of the song for us. The latest one... you didn't hear all of it at the top because it's like a 3-minute long song. I'm going to play it at the end of the podcast, but it is a specific nod to the G.I. Joe 1987...
86 or 87 movie.
There is an opening that has like lyrics. And
it's an epic 3-minute kind of 80s pop kind of rock song.
Yep. It gets in your head.
It will get in your head.
It sticks there.
Yep. Well, and now we have our own Roguecast version on which you can hear Jerick and me and Dave singing.
Yes. I'm excited to say that I was the one who did the high-pitched portions.
The what is sort of the Cobra Commander part.
Yeah, that would be the Cobra Commander, Cobra!
Yes.
Scream. But which with the different lyrics for this.
So that is at the tail end of the show. We wanted to spare anyone who did not want to listen to the full 3 minutes, although you all should... Take a time and really listen at the end of the show.
Watch the G.I. Joe original. Watch this. Know the glory of it.
Yes. So thank you, Jerick, for this and all the other theme songs.
Yep.
And
I think we should buy him like a Mozart like powdered wig, so that you know how like what's his name? Who's the rapper who did You Got What I Need in the 90s?
That would be.
Can't I say it?
I don't know because I just flat out of my head too.
Oh baby, you.
Yep. Nope. It's not
got
coming.
What I need.
It's not coming. Yep.
Anyway,
sing more, Dave. We might.
Did you ever see the video to that?
Yes, he was in fact wearing a powdered wig.
Wearing a powdered wig, playing a piano and stuff like that, Mozart style.
Yeah. That song, by the way, is called "Just a Friend."
Yes.
And I'm looking up to see who the rapper is who did it. That's Biz Markie. There
yes,
it is.
Yes. Jeez. Wow.
Yeah.
So, Jerick, we should combine him with Biz Markie, is what I'm saying.
Or, for version 5, we should redo Just a Friend, but Just a Rogue.
Oh, my. Jerick, I hope you're listening.
Oh, I'm sure he's listening.
But we have this one to enjoy for now.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Jerick's like, do you know how long I spent on that? Yes.
We should enjoy this one.
And actually, just, you know, when we went over there to record it, to record our parts with it, which was, you know, he had it all kind of prepped for it.
Yeah.
And just seeing all the work he had done and the overlaid tracks and stuff like that, I was like, oh my God.
Yep.
Jerick's insane. What a great friend.
Yep. And, you know, plenty of time before that 300th podcast hits. So.
Yes. For the Just a Rogue song.
Also, store news. We have started doing D&D on Tuesday nights as well as Thursday nights.
Yes.
Both nights are packed. We only have one DM right now. We're kind of keeping our eye open for another DM for Tuesdays because we can only handle 6 people, and it tends to fill up early in the morning. So if you want to come play D&D with us, we recommend calling... On Tuesday morning, if you're going to play on Tuesday. Thursday morning, if you're going to play on Thursday. We do ask people to call in on that day just so people don't set up a spot and then decide later in the week that they're not going to come. If you call that morning, we figure you're going to come out.
Right.
So it's sort of a just to make sure that people who are reserving the spots are actually coming. We have 4 DMs on Thursday, 1 on Tuesday. But you can come out and play D&D and just call in the morning and reserve a spot.
Yep. It's super exciting to see D&D doing so well.
Yep.
And I think we've talked about this before. Specifically, although the age range is kind of, we have sort of, I would say, teens to adults of all stripes.
Yep.
But as far as, like, sales of D&D go, I've seen a lot more sales to teenagers You know, to which I credit Stranger Things and, you know, factors I can't guess at. But I'm
right.
But I'm also, I assume that some of it is like shows like Critical Role, and just that there's so many that D&D is much more out there in the media than it was before. There's ways for kind of formats that young people listen to, social media and Twitch and stuff like that, or, you know, have D&D themes and stuff, and so it's cool. They're finding it.
Yeah, there was a discussion. There was a letter from Jim Zub, the writer of the current D&D comics over at IDW, talking about the sort of the big renaissance that D&D has had lately. So it's definitely been noticed.
That's cool. And I'm glad it's been noticed. I assume it's reflected in the sales. I just know that, yeah, I've been in this biz for since about the year 2000, and I've seen D&D 3rd, 4th, and now 5th edition from a retail perspective. And they have all done well, actually, at our location. We were an anomaly with 4th and that it did so well for us, but they've all done well. But I rarely saw a lot of teenagers buying it in what people think of as the traditional D&D style of like the 70s and 80s. And now that's coming back.
So this D&D is for the youth of today.
That's right. But also for the old men of today. And the old women and the old everyone.
Dungeons and Dragons and youth.
Yes.
All right. So also, Imperial Settlers is a game that is having a demo. We have an enthusiastic player who is going to come out and demo that game for us on Saturday, March 10th from 5 to 8 p.m. So if you want to come out and learn that game, come out and play Imperial Settlers.
Mm-hmm.
All right. News. There's a ton of news. And I have broken up into categories. So let's start with the movie news. What I think is probably the biggest news is that Avengers Infinity War has been moved up.
Do they ever do that? I've never heard of anyone doing that in my life.
Well, it's rare when a studio buys another mega studio, so I think it's kind of a rare thing.
Yeah.
But I believe that this all comes down to suddenly Disney and Fox are trying to coordinate their releases, and they had a lot of releases.
Yeah.
So they scooted some things around. You know, New Mutants got scooted next year and basically turned into a completely different movie. but, like, Avengers, they moved it up to it's coming out April 27th, and I don't know that we've seen this before.
Yeah. The slightly weird thing for us is that usually the weekend of Free Comic Book Day is the weekend in which that whatever the big Marvel movie is opening.
Yep.
Now, in some ways, I think this could be better for us because then people aren't necessarily having to decide to, you know, go watch a movie and then after that, where they may be kind of like tired or want to go eat or whatever, run by come by for free comics. Which, you know, there's some lines. It's, you know, we're I think quicker than many stores.
Yep.
But you might have to stand for like 15 or 20 minutes or something.
Yep.
And this way you'll be able to watch a movie the previous week and then come out the next week for the free comics.
True.
With full energy.
I just realized that March 10th already passed. So I'm wondering if that Imperial Settlers demo if I have the wrong date.
No, it happened.
Oh, never mind. Nick was giving me a look, which made me double check the date.
Yep, I was trying to subtly do that.
So, if you wanted to play Imperial Settlers, last Saturday would have been a great time to do that.
But if you still want to, you could probably buy the game and play it.
That's also possible. Yeah. And we are going to be doing more gaming in the store. We're trying to sort of ramp that up. We do have our Facebook group you can join, which has people posting about like putting together games, coming out for board games. You can always play our board game library, which is vast and ever expanding.
You know, it's board game centric, but people could like talk about like role playing games and other stuff too, right?
I guess. Yeah. No, you could do role playing games for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
I actually loved how they changed the date on Avengers. The Twitter between Robert Downey Jr. Avenger Marvel Studios.
Yeah.
Basically, Tony wanted it to happen earlier, so they did.
Yeah. The Marvel's sort of playful, we're all...
Oh, their marketing campaign is amazing.
It's not unlike what Stan Lee used to do. It's the whole, we're all part of the family. It's all in fun.
It is exactly a variant of that. Kind of, everybody gets to kind of feel like they're in a part of the Marvel family.
Yep.
The Marvel's also honestly smart about doing charitable and other cool things with their lead actors. Using social media for it. It is the equivalent of what was the bullpen bulletin of old.
And then you can get Captain America fighting with our dumb of a president, which is also as on-brand as you could possibly get.
It's winning all the time for him.
All right. Kristen Wiig has been signed to play, or is in development. At least sounds like it's more or less locked in.
Yeah, Patty Jenkins went on record and said that she is going to be playing the Cheetah.
She's playing the Cheetah.
Which is bizarre.
That's super weird. In Wonder Woman 2, by the way.
Yeah, in Wonder Woman 2.
That's weird.
It is very odd.
I like Kristen Wiig.
I don't have a strong sense of Kristen Wiig.
Well, she was the lead in the female Ghostbusters.
Right. I like watched about half of that.
She's been on Saturday Night Live. She did Bridesmaids.
She's in comedy stuff. I don't watch
comedy
stuff.
She's very funny.
She's very funny, and I don't know exactly how that kind of translates to the Cheetah, who is not
so,
a funny character.
What's her name? There's a couple different versions of the Cheetah,
this
but what's
is
a
Barbara
Minerva?
Minerva.
Barbara Minerva is usually kind of she's an archaeologist.
Yep. Yeah.
And tends to be kind of a driven, sort of desperate person, is how I think of her a lot of times. And then as Cheetah is, you know, kind of like super feral at times, of course. So
I'm not saying that Kristen Wiig can't play this character.
No, but it's a weird call.
Right.
It is.
It may mean a different take, but like, we're not surmising they're going to do a comedic take, right?
I don't think so. No.
But they might be doing something where, you know, Greg Rucka, I think in his run, made out that, like, right out of the gates of his run, that there was like a strained former friendship between, I think, Diana...
The rebirth stuff?
Yeah, but Diana did. And Barbara Minerva. So they may be going out of their way to make her somebody who's likable, so that, you know, it'll feel like Diana's fighting for her soul of, you know, Barbara Minerva when she fights the Cheetah to cure her or whatever.
Yeah, we'll see.
But yeah, that's it's kind of an odd call.
It is. I'm curious. I'm curious to see what Wonder Woman 2 looks like. It's going to be in the 80s, right? Didn't we decide, or is it World War II?
I'm not sure.
That is two wildly different periods.
No, they're essentially the same.
It's either World War II or the 80s.
Yeah, it's essentially the same. It's some kind of period piece. And I had this thinking, like, or maybe it's the 60s. I don't know. It's not modern times, is all I know.
Okay. Randy just, he's just going to keep
Do you think it could be
dates.
In Viking
times? It's in caveman times. Yeah, it's in caveman times. No, I think it is the 60s now I think about
okay.
it.
Okay.
But
60s would be a fun time to play around with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would allow them to, if they wanted to riff off some of these 60s Wonder Woman tropes.
Yeah.
You know, they could have, you know, the jumpsuit spy Diana.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Bell bottoms and stuff like that would be are always fun to play around with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess we'll see. Protests on campus create the Cheetah.
less weird, but also kind of surprising. Vin Diesel apparently is supposed to play Bloodshot.
Well, this had been rumored, and I guess it is now for sure.
Well, as for sure as anything was the Valiant. Until Valiant produces a movie, I don't believe any of it.
I mean, getting as a high-profile person as Vin
That's
Diesel
pretty,
involved.
Vin Diesel be a great Bloodshot.
Yeah, I'm sure he's like, I've read Bloodshot, I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I can see it. It's interesting that they got him.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't believe any of this is actually going to happen until it happens. But if Vin Diesel plays Bloodshot and it's based on sort of the Lemire stuff at all, like, I'll be totally into it.
Yeah. And then Valiant will spawn its mega
cinematic universe,
and then people will chomp the bit for more Valiant, which would be great.
Yeah, Valiant's,
I think that's
Valiant's got a great cinematic universe.
Like, what makes Valiant different from any guy with guns?
You mean Bloodshot?
Bloodshot.
He has nanites in his blood that give him a healing factor, and he can interface with machines and... Yeah,
what's he do?
The Punisher.
What's he do?
He hunts the sort of government conspiracy that created him, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. In the comics, he was created to hunt down Harbingers, which is their mutants,
their superpower dudes, yeah.
And then he sort of went rogue.
Do you think they'd, you know, if they did that, it'd be interesting to begin a movie, if you were going to do some world building, by the guy who hunts, basically, the superpowered people.
Yeah.
It'd be an interesting way to get a first glimpse of that world through kind of this grim and greedy character. And then eventually move on to seeing some of the Harbingers.
Well,
and stuff.
The Van Lente stuff, the way they started the Bloodshot run over at Valiant was interesting because he basically had these false memories of being a father and a husband and all this stuff before being turned into Bloodshot. And I can definitely see them playing that. And then him going around on these military missions and hunting down Harbingers. I do think it's an interesting way to introduce the Harbinger concept. And then you can go from there to introducing, you know, Harada and all the other Harbinger things.
Yeah.
And then later on, all the Immortals, like the Archer and Armstrong and all that stuff. Like, all of Valiant stuff is very adaptable to movies.
This could be their Iron Man.
It could be.
You never know.
Or it could be their Never Happened.
It could be their Never Happened, or it could just be their Dungeons & Dragons. You don't know.
Oh, man. Yikes.
I mean, I hope it's not that.
Yeah, we all hope that. Final movie news, Denis Villeneuve from Arrival and Sicario and Blade Runner 2049 is apparently going to make two Dune movies.
Right.
So it might take him a couple years.
Yeah, which is not to say he's going to do Dune in a sequel, but they're splitting up Dune.
Yeah, splitting Dune into two big movies.
Like most people would say, is really the only way to do it these days. Not that the miniseries was considered generally successful by most either.
Yeah.
Dune is a big, sprawling, kind of epic-y, kind of super boring if you're not careful, tale of politicking and hyper intelligence and religious manipulation of societies and sandworms.
What's interesting is I know Dune from Geek Osmosis.
Yeah,
I've never read it. I've never watched the movies. I don't have a ton of interest in the property, but I know it's like a big thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of big ideas and stuff that run around in the book that are intriguing to play around with on that sort of big sci-fi scale. Yeah. It is galaxy-spanning, massive, world-changing stuff where that central planet of Arrakis just happens to be kind of the changing point of, the turning point of an era.
Yeah.
I don't have, I've only read the original, the first book, and I was not super compelled to read the others. It is, It was fascinating, but it did not hold my interest as much as I had hoped either for a mega classic.
Do you think Denis Villeneuve is the guy to do it?
His ability to do boring makes him a strong candidate for it. I think he actually is, and I think he potentially could bring it to life. I didn't love Arrival, but I was interested in elements of it. I didn't dislike it either. And
did you
parts
see
of it,
Blade Runner, and didn't like it?
I was kind of the same spot on that. There were parts of it I liked, and then overall I was like, yeah, I didn't quite like that much as a movie, but parts of it I did.
Huh, okay.
For whatever reason, yeah, I think Dune is one that I kind of would like to see attempted again, and I really do feel like he might be the right mixture of kind of mainstream enough to that audiences actually show up for his movies, and that he did something very unlikely in making Blade Runner sequel that people did like.
Yeah,
I might not have loved it, but a lot of people did.
I really liked it, and I was not expecting to.
Yep, and so he might be the guy who can kind of do the impossible a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. That was my gut reaction based on having seen. What, all four of his movies? I don't know if he's done more than those three. I guess it's through his three. Was Sicario his first?
I think it was.
I haven't seen Sicario yet. I do want to see that.
Having seen all three and liked two of them quite a bit.
He's doing the Sicario sequel too, right?
Yeah, Sicario Harder.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, no, this is an actual thing.
Yeah, I know.
Not a joke.
No, I know. but I feel like, he's probably the guy to do this. It might get me to...
Dennis Villeneuve, Master of the Sandworm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All right. On to TV news, which there's also a fair amount of. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur is getting developed in a TV series.
It's an animated one, right?
I think that is correct. I didn't look too deep into this one.
I think
there's going to be a lot of CG dinosaur.
Which, I'd
that'd
be
awesome.
With.
I think it was Honor when we went and saw the trailer for
Wrinkle in Time,
and she was like the lead. She's like, "That's Moon Girl." We're like, yeah, for sure, that she'd be great.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I think a live action would be fun. But I think yes, this is an animated. This is a good property to get a little more exposure. I think.
Yeah, I wonder if it'll be set in the Marvel Universe or if they're going to let it be its own thing.
I don't know. If it's animated, the argument would be to just do the Marvel Universe.
Yeah. But I could see them, if they kind of created new villains and monsters. Like, the comic didn't quite take off.
Yeah, it did not quite.
All right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still going.
Is
yeah.
it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is. That's one yeah. that hasn't been canceled.
I thought that got chopped.
No, it's still going.
Yeah, okay. I guess I should say I haven't heard, the buzz on it that I would like to hear.
I think it sells well, and I think it actually sells extremely well in trade form, as opposed to single issues. And, it's just a fun concept, and I think they're doing really interesting things with it. I think you kind of have to
incorporate... A super smart girl and her dinosaur?
Yeah,
and their
but I think you kind of have fight? To incorporate...
I have no idea.
I assume you got to fight somebody.
I mean, she's teamed up with a lot of different Marvel superheroes, which...
Does she fight people?
I mean, she fights double dinosaurs. Who's the Moon Boy
The evil tribe?
Yeah, the evil tribe. I know that they have been involved because they're after Double Dinosaur.
I think they're called the Fire People or something.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, the Fire People.
What they should do is they should set it in the same universe as Big Hero 6. and start going their own like animated Marvel universe.
Not the craziest idea.
Is Moon Girl going to be involved in that other kind of hero Marvel animated
that,
thing?
I don't think she is. I think
is
that's
it Uprising or
yeah,
not?
Uprising, Marvel Uprising. No, I don't think she's on that.
Okay, because definitely, I think incorporating some of those characters into it would work.
Yeah.
So. I think they should open it up to the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, it'd be cool if like she kind of was like a bridge into the young Marvel Universe, you know?
Yeah.
So she would hang out with Miles and Nova.
I think
and
if you're using
like
a Marvel
that.
Character, oftentimes you wanting to kind of just have them on their own is sometimes boring.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. Well, it would be only if they like built
use
it up
the
in the same way that they do something like, I don't know, like back in the day, like Ben 10 or something like that, where they would create notable new villains that they could make toys of and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
Basically, I was wondering is if they might do something that would energize people more than the comic has.
Yes.
I mean, if this means I get a devil dinosaur figure at some point, I totally do.
But
I'm down
look,
for
he's
that.
Gonna look like a cartoon devil dinosaur.
I don't care. It's still a devil dinosaur character.
Disney, along similar lines, Disney is doing an animated musical young viewer version of The Rocketeer.
I missed this one.
Okay, so I love The Rocketeer.
Yeah.
As do all right thinking people.
Oh, and sadly, who was it? Somebody related to The Rocketeer just died recently. It was like the screenwriter, I think.
Oh, really?
In fact, I'm sure
it was
the screenwriter.
It was the screenwriter.
Yeah, so a quick tribute to that guy who wrote some awesome dialogue in that movie,
yep.
Including, I'm just going to quick cite. Who is the mobster?
That's Paul Sorvino.
I may not make an honest buck, but I'm 100% American.
Yeah. No, it was a good series. It's a good movie, and people should see it.
Sorry to divert from there, but Rocketeer musical.
Anyway, it's focused on a young girl named Kat who gets a surprise birthday present in the form of the Rocketeer jetpack, leading her to take on the mantle and going on an adventure with her best friend and her uncle. Told from a young girl superhero perspective, it's aimed at like 2 to 7 year olds.
That's really young.
Yeah, some of her best friends seem to have to be handy with gadgets. There's an original song. Each episode will be 2 11-minute-long stories. So this is weird. I'm not sure I love the idea. It's Disney Junior.
I thought, you know, like I thought this was going to be, yeah, like a regular musical, and like they would do like a period piece and make it almost more serious, like Wonder Woman.
Think like neither one of you guys are going to know this. Think like
like the Marvel and Disney, like are you talking about like the Marvel and Disney, you know, DC superhero girls and stuff like that?
No, well, it's in
music?
That vein, but there's a series of music that they're like teaching kids lessons.
What's the name of it?
I'm blanking on it. It's Kid Geniuses or something. They're basically these kids who go along, and there's a rocket ship that's like sentient, and they sing to it. And they go and learn stuff. And it's a really fun little show.
It's
sort of
like a Magic School Bus type thing?
It's kind of like that, yeah.
Okay. I feel like The Rocketeer is an interesting property for them to choose.
It's so pulp that it, like, and in its original form, lurid, kind of like not, not like lurid in like a really super crass way, but like, you know, his girlfriend was Betty Page, the king of basically pinups and like near nude modeling of her era and then like some nudity. Like,
Queen.
That is
Queen.
Yeah, okay.
Queen of Pinup.
That is an odd project for 2 to 7 year olds.
It's a weird one.
But it has clearly gone through such a heavy retrofit that what makes me wonder is, like, why did they do that in the first place? That's as strange as the Big Hero 6 thing.
Yeah.
Where they took this obscure 90s property, changed it so much that it's basically that in name only.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time... cool.
Yeah,
sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, I
like songs and adventure shows for girls. Sounds like a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm disappointed because I kind of wanted a Rocketeer aimed at me,
like more of the Rocketeer we know.
The idea of kids like getting exposed to the Rocketeer like that is cool.
Yeah.
But
at some point, there is Dad going to be like, let me show you Daddy's Rocketeer, and it's going to be like, oh, Dad, you're creepy and weird.
No. trust me, I've seen a lot of these Disney Kids things. They're very good at what they do.
Right. No, I just mean that always lurking out there will be the original one. Not that the original, like, especially as the in movie format, is, like, pretty wholesome Indiana Jones-type entertainment.
Sure. Yeah.
I suppose it's only that sort of Betty Page-ish stuff, and, you know, there's, like... I guess the rest is Nazi punch and fun.
Yeah, Nazi punch and fun.
Yeah.
Can I just get one thing? Can they get Timothy Dalton to do a voice for something?
That would be great.
I think that would just be perfect.
Maybe they can get him to straight up be a villain again. Yeah.
I doubt they'll be villains. Usually, these kind of shows don't have, like, outright villains.
Okay.
And if they're just, like, two...
That makes sense. It actually would be adorable if he was a very nice, like, a guide or something like that who helped out, or he was the uncle or whatever.
This is pretty notable. Jon Favreau is writing and directing a live-action Star Wars TV show.
It'll never work. That guy can't do anything.
So the guy who basically...
Elf? Come on.
The guy who launched the Marvel Cinematic Universe is now going to be launching the Star Wars TV universe. Yes. Favreau hasn't done TV in a long time, I don't think.
When has he ever done? He was on Friends. I mean,
that's all I can think.
I was going to say, but he's never directed.
I mean, he's probably been producing stuff.
Probably.
But yeah, this is huge. And also, we don't know what era or anything like that. But I'm excited about this. I love the idea of a Star Wars live action show.
Well, I'm sure
they've been talking about it for 5 years or more. I feel like. Mm-hmm.
And this is for the streaming.
We don't know for sure, but yeah, it seems like it's probably for Disney's streaming show.
Any notion on format? Hour long?
No
probably.
Idea. We don't know anything other than Jon Favreau's doing it.
I feel like...
Can we sign up for this Disney service now? Because, I mean, honestly...
Right, just take my money. Yeah. Well, we also know they're going to do at least one or two new Marvel shows. They've said that. There's going to be a ton of content on this show, on this network.
Yeah, it's not going to be one of those where we like one show and nothing else.
I think I've got my Star Wars fill.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Really?
Even if it's a really good show, and I think it probably will be, I'll probably still be watching the movies for a while, but I think I will get my Star Wars fill before too long.
Oh man, I'm still super. I mean, I'm not reading the comics anymore, but that's mostly just because there's so many comics.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm definitely very much back on board the Star Wars train now that Lucas is not involved in it anymore. I really like what Disney's doing with it, and I'm going to go live at Disneyland Star Wars.
You just think there's too much saturation of...
I mean, only for me. I'm not even saying that they need to stop what they're doing. It seems to be pleasing folks, but just that I will have I'll have gotten my amount.
All right, final TV news. Netflix is turning Extreme Studios into a cinematic universe. That's Rob Liefeld's Youngblood, Bloodstrike. Blood, Strike Death, kill Hurt, Maim Super,
and Shaft.
And Shaft. Some of those might be made up.
I think I heard this in my head just immediately, just kind of smacked against the desk.
Here's the thing. Having seen Alan Moore do it, I know that you can turn these properties into fascinating characters.
And Netflix is not stupid. They'll either be clever about it, or they'll spoof them in a way that's really funny.
So if it's like a live action spoof of the Extreme, that
was
be
wondering if it could
so basically
be.
Like take the Tick and turn.
But even more so, like basically, if everyone's extreme, if they're making fun of all the 90s extremeness of it all, like that could be super fun.
Yeah. It could be.
I can also see a straight version of it. I can see a. You could go sort of the Mark Millar route where it's like celebrity superheroes and more killing and like a government operation.
So
like,
Netflix now owns Rob Liefeld's comic verse and also Mark Millar's comic verse.
Yeah,
so they're
cornering the market on the 90s,
and they're gonna have two competing superhero universes.
They're not competing. They're
not competing. They're probably the same.
Yeah.
Okay, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And I guess
Amazon's
I'll watch.
Got the Tick, Hulu's got Runaways, superheroes won.
I mean, superheroes did indeed win.
But Netflix owns Rob Liefeld Shaft 7 inches fully postable. which is an action figure joke, because there was someone made an action figure of his character Shaft, not that Shaft. But a guy who
his archer.
His archer.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, means I have a fondness for him because I like superhero archers.
Yeah. Honestly, it's not a bad design. The red, the gold.
It's not terrible.
His costume was just fine.
It's fine.
He kills the dude with a pen in the first issue of Youngblood.
Yes, he does.
Throw the pen at him.
The action figure was promoted as
Rob Liefeld Shaft, 7 inches, because 7 inches tall, fully posable.
Yes.
And, that's not even a double, that's a single entendre.
Yeah, it is the literal advertising.
You also have, what, Bedrock and Die Hard? And
yep.
Yeah, Bedrock, which is his Thing
and
knockoff.
Troll,
which is his Troll knockoff.
And his Wolverine
knockoff.
It was his Wolverine
knockoff.
That's right, he was Wolverine and Puck in one.
Yeah,
Die Hard was the Iron Man knockoff.
Die Hard was Iron Man, and Vision.
And Vision, and I can't remember anyone else off that team.
Vogue?
Oh, God, yeah, Vogue.
Very 90s name, Vogue.
Wasn't she like a Rogue knockoff?
She was sort of a Rogue. Actually, she was sort of a Rogue in Gambit, because I think she had like the acrobatics and that kind of thing. And then there was, we forget Chapel, the guy who killed Spawn.
Oh, right,
Chapel was his Punisher knockoff.
His Punisher.
Wow. So yeah.
So but they've got regular Punisher.
But the thing is, all those characters, you could do something fun with them. I do love the idea of a parody version of
it. That'd be great.
But I could see them playing it straight and doing a fun version. It's like, it's not that the ideas were bad, it's that Rob Liefeld's execution was terrible and the ideas weren't great.
This reminds me in a roundabout way. The original XCOM, Randy.
Yeah.
I don't know if you did you ever play the original?
No.
So the original has an opening sort of cinematic sequence, but this was made in, like, I don't know, like 94 or something like that before, and it's like real simple animation, but it was clearly based on the designs of like Liefeld and Jim Lee and stuff like that. So when you see like the XCOM team assembling, they've got like the screaming mouths of his, you know, characters.
Yeah.
They're all ripped and stuff like that. They look like... like XCOM, you know, armored up anti-alien fighters,
sure,
by way of Extreme Studios, while it's playing like bad tinny computer music versions of like, you know, think the Wildcats music or something like that from the cartoon.
Oh no, that's what we should do for our 300th episode.
The Wildcats.
Wildcats theme, but
they're heroes,
roads, yeah.
Not zeros.
Yes.
But, yeah. I will have to find this video and post it on Facebook, though, because it's insane. the original XCOM, as great a game as it was, had a cinematic that was a total knockoff of Rob Liefeld.
That's great. All right. Trailers. So we watched the trailer for Lost in Space on Netflix.
Yep.
Which Parker Posey is in it Mrs. Robinson,
right?
I don't remember her name.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember the mom. I don't remember who's playing the dad.
I honestly didn't recognize many of the people involved other than Parker Posey.
And did they gender flip and race swap Dr. Smith?
I believe they did.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
But this looks interesting. This looks fun.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that in a way I wouldn't quite use the word fun because I was expecting it to be like in the style of either the original show. Or even, I guess, what they were attempting a little bit more with the 90s movie. I expected a little bit more kind of adventuriness or like almost like slight campiness of the original show.
This looks more survival sci-fi.
And it's more survival sci-fi. And it looks really good.
I think you nailed it in sort of like it's The Martian and Interstellar and
yeah.
that kind of thing.
Well, we were talking about this off mic, but it was like the original pitch for Lost in Space back in the 60s when it was competing with Star Trek was instead there was that tradition of the Swiss Family Robinson family surviving on building this giant, treehouse, yeah. That they would be the Space Family Robinson, and they literally are the Robinsons.
And they build a space house.
And they build a space house, and they have survivalist adventures.
Yeah.
It's just that it was very campy in the 60s, and they're kind of running it through the Martian version today, where, you know, with the aesthetics, I think of, you know, stuff like Mass Effect is kind of a catch-all for good futuristic designs in some ways, but it has something of that look.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm excited to see where they go with it.
It's Netflix. I'll watch it.
Yeah,
they've got their Robbie the Robot is this very cool looking
biomechanical.
Biomechanical Robbie the Robot looks great.
Yeah.
Ralph Breaks the Internet. Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Right. I was like, what are you talking about?
I didn't get a chance to watch this one.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
I love the first one.
Yeah. It's fun. It's Ralph has this weird, you know, he's a bad guy, but he's also sort of naive.
Yeah.
Right.
And
he's a gruff but lovable guy, like The Thing and stuff like that.
And unleashing that on something as corrupting as the internet is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. It is literally, like him responding to...
message boards and things like that.
Yeah, kind of in a way. Yeah. Like, all the things that make up the internet. So I would imagine you're going to kind of get his, like, spin on YouTube and... app games and stuff like that.
Yeah, basically what it looks like is that the arcade gets Wi-Fi.
Oh,
The guy's plugging an old router in and like he's you got Wi-Fi now, and then he and what's Sarah Silverman's character or whatever.
Oh right, the
Princess Penelope.
Yes, Princess Penelope
or Vanellope. I don't know. But anyway, the two of them basically follow that out on the internet.
Oh, yeah, that's good chaos.
Yeah. Final trailer. Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, which Nick was just surprised to learn that neither Dave nor I have seen the original Fantastic Beasts.
I mean, I was surprised. I thought the first one was very, very good.
I've heard it's good. I just don't have any interest.
Yeah, I guess I have more...
I don't like things that are fantastic, and Randy doesn't like things that are beasts.
I don't like beasts.
Interesting. Then why do you play D&D?
I like
that's actually his least favorite part of D&D.
I only like Displacer Beasts.
No, but I loved the first one. I thought it added a few more layers of sort of interest to the world that is Harry Potter.
Right. First thing that we had seen that was not in the current era, other than the occasional flashbacks.
Well, it wasn't
also, to like Lupin or
it wasn't those guys. That. It was sort of all on American soil.
Right.
So it was all kind of that kind of version of
yep.
the Harry Potter world.
Yep.
And we're getting to see more of that, and we get Jude Law as Dumbledore, and kind of the antics versus a new big bad villain. I really liked it, and I love the characters, and love seeing... I see they're all back in the trailer, so that Ooh. Makes me happy, because they're all great characters.
Some kind of big game news. Pathfinder 2nd Edition is coming.
Yes. Right?
There's a Pathfinder playtest they're putting out. That's going to be, you can buy this, just like the original Pathfinder, you can buy the playtest book. There's like three versions, there's a soft cover, hard cover, then there's like leather bound, there's an adventure, there's a flip mat. And basically it sounds like they're taking a lot of what they did in Starfinder and applying it to Pathfinder.
We were guessing when Starfinder came out that it might have been a test drive for a second edition, and seems clearly it was the case.
Well, it's been 10 years.
Yep.
They've definitely, you know.
And they've put out, I think, as many books as you can reasonably put out. You know, they could keep doing adventures, but
yeah.
They put out a lot of, it has been, like, so wildly supported that there's a book for all things, some might say too many books.
Yeah.
They're
sort of talking about it in their blogs too. They posted a blog about their advancement system. Basically, they're setting up so that all your experience points that it always takes 2,000 experience to gain levels.
Yep.
So you always know where you are. It always takes 1,000 experience to gain a level. So you always know where you are between levels, which is a really good idea.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's not like the next level up is at 7,800.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I have 12,500 experience. I am halfway to 13th level.
Right.
They're gonna have to scale their combat ratings and that kind of thing for that, which should work. They're talking about how everybody gets a certain like. Everything should get something new at every level. So, like, everybody's going to have more, like, feats. So, so fighters will have feats and spellcasters and all that. So, everybody will get something when they advance. So, there won't be any of these dead levels that you get, which is a good idea. And they're definitely putting in a lot of the concepts from Starfinder, which I like a lot of those, you know, the backgrounds and that kind of stuff. So, I'm kind of excited about this. I've been really enjoying Starfinder. I really like the Pathfinder system. I think this will do well for them.
I haven't seen too many reports back from like among our customers,
yeah.
But just casual, my anecdotal browsing online is that I was expecting that some people might be like freaking out.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
I've bought thousands of dollars worth of Pathfinder stuff, and now you have a new version of it.
Yeah.
But I have not really seen that, and I think also part of it is like. It has been 10 years. That is, it's not unreasonable for them to do a new version of it at this point. And as always with any of these things, no one's pointing a gun at your head. You can take or leave it, but chances are they're going to do a very good job, and you're going to want to check it out.
Yep.
And I think people also know that they Paizo does good work.
Yeah.
I will be interested to see, because one of the things that made Pathfinder notable was just how high the production values were.
Yeah.
And really amazing artwork. I wonder if they're going to still run with that same guy who so defined their look.
No, black and white sketches drawn in finger style.
In the Dungeon Crawl Classics, yes. Kind of deliberately retro style.
Yeah.
What is the name of that artist? Can you remember?
Eric Mona is the developer. Wayne Reynolds.
Wayne Reynolds, yeah.
He's one of the big ones.
Yeah, and like, you know, even all the iconics that are like on all their covers and mm-hmm. they're in the comics and stuff like that, he, you know, I feel like he, if not designed them, he certainly developed the look that's iconic for them. It'll be weird if it's not him. It is him, would he just be doing new, all new art, you know, still in his style?
Sure.
Or are they going to change up their style? That would blow my mind a little bit if they did had a major style change.
I don't think so either
because it's kind of iconic of them.
They're all be animated.
I mean, somebody could do something like that. I imagine as long as they produced it in as slick a style as they did, if everybody looked like anime characters or something like that, they could probably do a good job of it. So you said there's a what's the book?
Playtest book.
The playtest book, and what is that going to be?
It's the core rulebook, essentially.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the
maybe just borrowing, you know, it's essentially like an alpha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Essentially that. All right. Comic book news. There's been a fair amount of comic book news coming. Mostly new stuff that's coming out. One of the big ones is that Neil Gaiman's The Sandman is coming back with a new Sandman universe. It's part of Vertigo's imprint, which, by the way, I didn't realize Mark Doyle was the executive editor of Vertigo now. He's the guy who brought around the
Batman and
Batgirl and... Yep. And He's one of
very
the guys.
Talented.
Yeah.
He brought around what?
The Batgirl of Burnside. Snyder on Batman.
Right. Like, he's responsible. Oversaw some of their more successful character tweaks.
So the Sandman universe will start out as a one-shot, which Gaiman, I believe, is writing along with the various other writers he's bringing in. He's bringing in four collaborators. Novelist Nalo Hopkinson and Kat Howard. Comic writers Cy Spurrier and Dan Waters. Don't know any of those people. Cy Spurrier I know from various things. Dan Waters did the book Limbo for over at Image.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So the basic premise is that Daniel, who became Lord of the Dreams at the end of Sandman, has vanished into chaos, and each of the new books will pick up a story thread. So there's The Dreaming, written by Cy Spurrier, which takes place in Dream's Kingdom, which is going to focus on Lucian the Librarian, a monstrous named Dora, and Nuala of Faerie, which is interesting. Okay. The House of Whispers, which is the third house, along with House of Secrets and House of Mystery. It's about a woman named LaToya who is trapped in a coma. Her girlfriend and two sisters call upon the Book of Whispers, stealing the essence from a voodoo deity in the process. Causes their home to crash into Dream's Kingdom.
It's actually kind of a cool premise.
Dimwar's Lucifer is about the devil who's in a small town, having lost his memory and being trapped in the body of a frail old man. In Los Angeles, a policeman battling brain cancer finds himself with a mission to find Lucifer and kill him.
Also, pretty good premise. Yeah.
And finally, and all the premises come from Gaiman, so of course. Yeah. And then finally, Books of Magic is coming back. Timothy Hunter is still destined to become the most powerful musician in the universe. So there's a group of cultists who want to kill him before he can become too powerful. And a substitute teacher joins the school and offers to show him a way to master his powers.
Is that substitute teacher John Constantine?
That'd be amazing.
Because
hello, boys and girls. Who wants to learn how to smoke?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
The designs on these look great. They've shown us the cover and the trade designs. It all looks really good. I don't know how much interest I honestly have in this. I don't know that I need the same thing I can do, but they're all good premises.
Yeah.
A lot of times when a super talented person oversees sort of like a little micro universe, it doesn't tend to be as good as I want it to be. I've seen that project happen a number of times over the years. These guys, and I don't know enough about the writers here to say yay or nay on it.
Yeah.
I also, I think like you, I'm not like feeling like I need more Sandman all the time.
I haven't even read all the Sandman there is. I haven't read that last, that last Endless book they did.
Right. The one that was sort of a prequel thing? Yeah. But at the same time, these do sound like pretty interesting premises, so I'll be curious to check it out. The one that's set like primarily in Dream's universe and the other one about the girls and the voodoo priestess and stuff like that sound particularly interesting to me. We'll see.
I'm always skeptical, but I'm a fan of Lucifer, so seeing more of that character, not written by either Gaiman or
Mike Carey
is always a little trepidatious for me.
Yeah, it sounds like they're doing something different enough with Lucifer that it would at least another voice is.
Well, I couldn't plug into
is a change of premise.
I couldn't plug into the last one that they tried.
Is that canonical? As far as all that goes?
Not sure, actually.
I was curious.
So, also in the DC news, this is all DC-related news, Brian Michael Bendis is coming over to DC, and he is creating...
What?
Yeah. He's creating all new ongoing creator-owned series called Cover and Pearl, with his frequent collaborators. David Mack is on Cover, and Michael Gatos is on Pearl. Pearl is about a Yakuza tattoo artist who falls in love with her counterpart from a rival crime family. Interesting enough. Cover is a spy fiction series centered on a popular comics artist who gets recruited to be an intelligence operative. What the hell?
That could be interesting. Another, writer, novelists write endlessly about novelists who end up uncovering something. So, besides, we don't even know. Like, the tone could even be comedic on that.
Yeah. This falls in that same category of I have no interest in it, but I'm glad they're there for the people who have that interest.
Well, this is the equivalent of what he was doing at Marvel, where he had several of his own creator-owned projects. What were you going to say, Nick?
No, I mean, and isn't it in the same article that they're moving Powers to DC and then doing that as OGNs now?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
So I mean, I'll give Bendis stuff a try. I mean, his creator-owned stuff was never my cup of tea, but
he always kind of wrote fun first issues on those, and sometimes I don't know that there are any that I stuck with. Most of which part of which is because there was massive delay.
Yeah,
all
the scheduling
time.
Was just
he
insane.
Always gave priority to sort of his big books, you know, which I at least get sort of. But it meant that his personal projects tended to suffer.
I'm hoping he has figured out a way to juggle all of these items.
We'll see. At the same time, it's not exactly hurting his career or anything that he didn't do that well at Marvel. You know, he's still being heralded as a king coming to DC. Yeah. You know, He's probably the top three movers and shakers in the industry at
now
any given time.
An X-Men movie.
Yeah. Not necessarily thinking any Bendis project will definitely ever loop me again. Yeah. But I'll give him a shot. There's usually something of interest in his stuff. That's what I find.
So here's another thing from executive editor Mark Doyle, DC Black Label. So this is basically intended to like give. So the quote here is: DC Black Label offers leading writers and artists of any industry the opportunity to tell their definitive DC stories without being confined to canon. So basically, it's a come write without worrying about continuity stuff.
Right.
Well, this is basically where Batman White Knight would fit in.
Yeah, Batman White Knight belongs in there. John Ridley's previously announced the other history of the DC Universe is going to be the first project in there. Superman Year One by Frank Miller and John Romita Jr. Frank Miller's the last person in the world about writing Superman, but I understand that that's going to be a thing for people. Batman Last Night on Earth by Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo, so they're returning back. Batman wakes up in the desert. The Joker's head is alive in a jar beside him. And they are in this weird future where villains are triumphant and society has liberated itself from the burden of ethical codes.
I mean,
that's weird.
It is a very
one is that?
That's Batman Last Night on Earth.
By
Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo. Mm.
That one's going to do well.
Batman Damned by Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo, which looks like basically the Joker is dead, and what does Batman do about that? Wonder Woman Historia of the Amazon, which brings Kelly Du Sue DeConnick to DC, with Phil Jimenez, one of these big Wonder Woman artists on art. It's a big Homeric epic of the lost history of the Amazons and Queen Hippolyta's rise to power. Wonder Woman Diana's Daughter by Greg Rucka, which is 20 years after Wonder Woman disappears, a young woman seeks to reclaim what's been forgotten. So it sounds like sort of Wonder Woman Dark Knight story.
That's what Greg Rucka moves off the main book but goes to do, like OGN or whatever.
And the other history of the DC Universe we already know about is sort of the disenfranchised groups of the Marvel Universe or the DC Universe. So.
That's the one that most interested
me.
What do we know, do we know the format from that?
No. Nope.
So is it going to be like, but it sounds like, is there any notion of whether it'll be like, say, who's Steel? John Henry?
Yeah, John Henry Irons.
Yeah, is it like, will we see, like, you know, through like, presumably through his eyes and John Stewart and all those other guys, all the other black and other people of color characters? Yeah, and I assume that would also be
a compelling literary series analyzing iconic DC moments and charting socio-political gains through the perspective of DC superheroes who come from traditionally disenfranchised groups, including John Stewart, Extrano, Vixen, Supergirl, Katana, and Renee Montoya, among others. At its core, the story focuses on the lives of those behind the costumes and their endeavors to overcome real-world issues. It isn't about saving the world, it's about having the strength to simply be who you are. It sounds to me like it's going to be each issue is going to focus on one of those characters. Extrano's the weird one.
Who is
he's from that new... He's one of the first... He's probably the first gay superhero.
Okay.
From the New Guardians.
Oh, way.
Yeah.
Did I hear Supergirl in there?
You did.
What's the deal with that?
She's an alien.
Yeah, well, she's a woman.
And a woman.
I think I got it.
Yeah, so they'll be doing sort of
That's something like what I thought. They specifically mentioned big moments in the DC Universe.
Yeah.
So, you know, I presume we'll see, you know, sometimes like Crisis or the earthquake in Gotham City or, you know, any given
thing. That Cronus' hand created racism.
But that sounds potentially interesting. The line as a whole, if someone were to ask me like what I feel like Marvel and DC needs, I would not have said more venues for superhero stories for adults.
I'm the same place with you, but the thing is, we're not the audience for this.
Sure.
You and I don't
We're adults.
No, but you and I, we're not looking for that. This is for people who want to be able to read comics but not say they read comics.
Right.
And it's for
but
people
But I also
who,
think average comic, this is something people will want.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think if we base sales just on, like, White Knight and kind of a darker edge to Batman, people always turn out for
it. It's not what I want, but there's clearly an audience for it.
Yeah.
What I want is, the next thing is Plastic Man by Gail Simone and Adriana Mello. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
And the first piece of promo art looks great. Yeah. So, we don't know much about that, but I'm looking forward to Gail Simone doing Plastic Man.
Yeah, I've never thought about Plastic Man ongoing, but I'm all for it.
Yeah, well, last one was Cal Baker's, so...
That's true.
And it was weird cartoon fun.
Right, right, yeah.
All right, Marvel comic news, because Marvel's in the midst of their big revamp. We got a bunch of titles listed that are probably going to come on the next previews, but... Cosmic Ghost Rider by Donny Cates and Jeff Shaw, the guys who did God Country and are currently doing Thanos. They're spinning off their Frank Castle as Space Ghost Rider into a series.
What's the deal with Frank Castle as Space Ghost Rider? What? Who?
He becomes the herald of Galactus, then switches sides to Thanos.
Becomes Thanos is like
we're talking about some hypothetical future.
Yeah, this is the Thanos wins future. This is in the Thanos book.
Ah, okay. Yep.
He's spinning out of the Thanos book that they're currently writing. Captain America by Ta-Nehisi Coates and Daniel Acuña. It'll be interesting. I saw Ta-Nehisi Coates comparing Captain America to Obama. He said, this is a guy who really just believes in the American dream.
Was
like,
that
you
in
know,
the article at The Atlantic that he wrote about why he was writing Captain America?
It might have been.
It was a
like,
good article.
I'm like, you know what? That's a good... Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther I like, but it's a little boring. And I'm worried he's going to bring that to Cap, which has been, I think, pretty solid for
at least by at this point, we'll have seen the movie and seen that it's allowed to have... You're allowed to have sexy action adventure moments.
Yeah. But I think that... I think that Cap as Obama makes a lot of sense. If that's where he's going, I can see that. That's an interesting take.
Beautifully drawn by Daniel Acuña.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah.
So is Cap a socialist now?
Yes, Cap
is
a socialist.
Is that what I understand? The socialist from Kenya?
And a secret Muslim.
Yeah. Yes.
Deadpool by Scotty Young and Nick Klein. That'll be fun. Scotty Young seems like a right guy to write Deadpool.
Yeah, I mean, if he can bring the same kind of insanity that he brings to I Hate Fairyland to Deadpool, it makes a hell of a lot of sense.
I mean, I don't care, but good for you Deadpool fans.
Yeah.
Also... The Sentry by Jeff Lemire and Kim Jacinto. Nobody wants this. Nobody wants the Sentry back.
You know who
right?
wants this?
Who?
Jeff Lemire.
Yeah.
He obviously has a fondness for the character.
Yeah.
Because, you know...
Well, Donny Cates brought him back and used him well in Doctor Strange, so...
Which, you know, we didn't think was possible that anybody could use the Sentry well.
I don't know. It's Jeff Lemire. I'll at least give it a read, but I'm very skeptical of this one. And then finally, Doctor Strange by Mark Waid and Jesus Sayaz, which Mark Waid is going to take Doctor Strange out into space, which sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's lost his connection to Earth's arcane power again, I guess, and is going to go into space to find allies in the stars.
Definitely stuff you could do there. The alien magic, I think, would be an interesting thing.
Yeah.
I don't know how often they've touched on that in the comics, but it'd be interesting for him to encounter styles of magic that about which he knows nothing.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to wear a helmet because he's magical.
That's true. That's actually true. That's why Harry Potter can go in space.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot about Harry Potter, but I assume that's
true.
I'm
sure he's going to wear him,
like for a big bubble helmet like the 50s?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Is there any other kind?
Yeah, and then he had the what's the cloak called? What's the name? The cloak's not the cloak of Agamotto, is it?
No,
no
cloak of levitation.
Is it just called the cloak of
levitation? Yeah.
He needs a jetpack of levitation.
Sure.
All right, that's about an hour worth of news. thanks for sticking with us. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the last 3 weeks. We are talking about comics the week of Wednesday, February 28th, March 7th, and this week, March 14th.
Right.
Now, most of the focus is going to be on this week's comics just because we've sold out a fair amount of the last few, and we're waiting on restock. So, before we get into our picks and everything, want a quick shout out to a couple books from Image and DC, both written by Jeff Lemire, I think. They got second prints coming in early April, and that's Gideon Falls, which is, did you read that?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So what's Gideon Falls?
Gideon Falls is a kind of a supernatural tinged mystery split between two characters. One was one is a guy who's actually, I don't know what like his job is or whether he's even got a job, the guy who's collecting the artifacts and stuff.
Yeah, I feel like he's not homeless, but he's almost like semi-homeless. Yeah. Kind of a
he's in treatment. He's seeing a therapist, and it's clear he's been committed before.
Yeah, he was in like a halfway house, and he may still be into some like, but he's on his own at times and trying to be good.
Obsessively though, he's collecting these little pieces he finds in places of like of broken like doors and hinges and things like that.
It's just kind of odd stuff.
That without saying too why, he thinks that they come from some place and that there's a link to them all, and it's got a definite meaning to him. And his therapist is trying to figure out if they need to have him committed again.
Exactly. And then the
meanwhile,
other character is
a new priest.
A new priest who's coming into town. Because the old priest,
he died. Under somewhat mysterious circumstances.
Well, the town's not talking about it.
Yeah, the town's not talking about it. And there is clearly a link between these two gentlemen.
Yeah.
Without saying too much more, it's a very compelling mystery. Both the priest is an interesting character, and it allows Jeff Lemire to write some of that small town stuff that he's very good at.
But it's also, I think, a really pretty good, got a horror edge as well.
Yes, there's some creepy stuff in it, and I am not in love with the artist Andrea Sorrentino, but I do think in some ways he's a very good fit for the book, and he's has kind of a creepy realism going on. It's sort of hard to describe, but when you see it, it's got like his realism kind of has a little a rough edge to it, yep. I guess I'd say. But he is also very detailed, and the captures both the kind of the paranoid nature of the world. There's warped, distorted sort of bubble lens shots of the world, and he captures that kind of grungy world of the obsessive
kind
collector
of a cinematic
guy.
Cinematic look to it.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and it's cinematic as well. So I think anybody who likes Lemire's other stuff is going to like this. But also, if you're looking for kind of a what was the? I felt a little Twin Peaksy about it. But not in that way where it's like it's quirky. Only in the kind of that broader sense of like some of the weird mysteries of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, everything is. Everything about the town is kind of off.
Right. And then beyond that, yeah, I don't know quite what to compare it to because I don't know where it's going.
Right.
But it is an eerie mystery. What was the other?
And then the second printing of that will be in stores on April 4th. And then the other one is The Terrifics.
Oh, right, right. Yeah. The basically, Fantastic Four for DC.
Yeah, exactly. The homage to FF by way of Mr. Terrific. Metamorpho, Plastic Man, and then
Phantom Girl, or a version of Phantom Girl from the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah,
it was a fun first issue. I thought.
And that was Ivan Reis on
yeah,
art?
Yeah, it was Ivan Reis on art.
Yeah, so and that one I believe is coming in the week after that. So I think that's going to be the 11th. Those are both have second printing coming. Coming next week, first printing is coming back in, hopefully either this week or next week, is Infinity Countdown number 1.
Yep.
Which was the start of the sort of a Guardians-heavy story about like the Infinity Gems.
Yep, it's right. Sort of picking up
We're going to call that like their... It's basically Marvel's summer tie-in, you know, thematically, if not storyline-wise, to Infinity War.
Yep. Right. And then... Oblivion Song, which we should be getting, we're getting a bunch of first printings back in next week. But what was, Nick, you read this one. What's that one about?
Yeah, it's basically about a alien world being pulled into ours and then sort of taking over, essentially, a section of a large city. And people are stuck there.
Real quick, just before you go on. This is written by Robert Kirkman of Walking Dead fame, and a lot, and that's why it sold out this week.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He's definitely, and he does not do new big projects too often. He did what was his other one?
Invincible.
Invincible, but no, his Possession.
Outcast. Yeah.
Um, And like, those are, like, that's his big projects, you know, for, like, the last 10 years.
Exactly. But with Invincible finishing, he needed another project, and this is what we've gotten. But,
now,
yeah, basically...
Now, when you say a world hit, it's not like there's, like, literally, like, an alien planet sitting right up against Earth, right?
It is, actually.
Does everybody see it?
Yeah. It's basically been walled off.
It's like a zone.
Basically. It's like a zone. Taking... Basically, it's taken, if you imagine New York City, if they had taken Manhattan...
Right.
So that section, and walled it off.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're like monsters and sort of hostile environments, and people are left stuck there. And there's this one guy who's been going in and out for various reasons.
The monsters
reasons.
Are like look like they were like from like The Thing by John Carpenter. Big, mutating, weird. You know, for in modern context, it'd be stuff from like Silent Hill or what's the space game?
Oh, Dead Space?
Yeah, Dead Space.
Sort of. There's a larger bent to it. It's not sort of...
Oh, no, I don't mean it to, like, say it's derivative or anything. I just mean, like, and it's not just generic monsters. These are pretty cool-looking. The guy who draws it gets to draw really cool, creepy crawlies.
Yeah, and the central character is a guy who is sort of compelled to go in and out of that area saving people.
Right.
And
he's after some loved ones.
Yeah, and he has sort of a support staff of people who he's saved. And there's this interesting sort of through line of PTSD and how the people over there who've come back deal with sort of the being normal in a normal place as opposed to have been over there for years.
Right.
So it's an interesting first issue. I found it to be very, very readable and beautiful artwork.
All right, so that covers the stuff that we're out of.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now let's talk about the stuff we have. Nick, what's your pick this week?
My pick this week is the returning issue of Mr. Miracle, so issue number 7.
You've picked a lot of that series.
I haven't probably, in fact, picked all 6 issues and 7 issues
now. No, I stole
now.
One from you.
Oh, that's right. You did steal one, you bastard.
Yep.
But I love this book because each issue really does focus on a central theme, just one theme per issue.
Mm-hmm.
This one is sort of the birth of Scott Free's child.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically him and Barda trying to get...
Focuses on the escape from the womb.
And yes, kind of. But Barda and him going to the hospital, sitting in the delivery room, sort of going through the motions of that, getting a fetal heart monitor.
Yeah.
I love that he's casually in the... wearing a Superman logo shirt. You know, there's a great group of people who show up in the waiting room because of their ties to Big Barda.
Oh, that is bizarre.
It is bizarre, and it works so well, and I never thought it would.
I don't see how... I don't know how you do that and don't go camp, but...
I mean, there is some campiness involved. Okay. You can't help it. But... there's also just really fun little nods. There's a poster in the delivery room that says BA and it has Wonder Woman's logo. So it's Be a Wonder Woman.
Nice.
But there's some great stuff. Just the banter between the two characters on them trying to figure out a name for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
He's throwing out weird ones like you'd expect, like Axe Blow. And they're kind of 90s sounding now that I really think about it.
But it sounds like more like a New Genesis Warrior name,
exactly.
Like Orion.
That's what he
and
wants.
Stuff.
That's what he wants it to sound like. But it's sort of just the connection between the two main characters and sort of the love that they have for each other, and sort of the normalcy of it all.
Right.
And that's sort of what the whole series has kind of gotten down to in a lot of respects. Them arguing in traffic and.
Yep.
You know, sitting on the beach together, experiencing sort of a final day. And there's more of
is
that.
Is it possible that Tom King should just be writing slice of life stories?
It's kind of, it might be. But it's a great issue. It does have some kind of emotional gut punches. And we're still dealing with the sort of weird kind of imagery of where things are shaky. We don't
right.
quite
we
know
don't,
exactly.
There's all sorts of underlying mysteries in this. Is this in fact a 12 issue series
it
and
is.
Then it's done?
Yeah, it is a 12 issue miniseries. So we're over the hump.
Was Omega Men which that or was that an ongoing series that just?
I think it was that second thing. It was
they got canceled.
I think it was, but
Because otherwise it seems like, you know, because The Vision was like 12 issues.
That was also a series that ended, wasn't it?
No, that one was meant to be 12.
Yeah. Well, maybe, I'm just wondering if that's going to be like kind of his format.
Yeah, 12 issues? It's not a bad idea.
No,
yeah.
I think it's probably a good format. Yeah. This issue does have two really great covers.
Both the ones I saw were really good.
So yeah, I'm loving this book. I continue to love this book. Dave, what is your pick?
My pick I have to dig up because it wasn't on top of my pile here. There we go. I picked it every week it's come out, or every month it's come out, is that Judas comic.
Man,
I love Judas. Betrayers.
You love Betrayers.
Yeah, well, if there's a Benedict What's Arnold comic, that? I
yeah.
want it.
Yeah, that's true.
If there's a Brutus comic, I want it.
Yeah.
And who else is Betrayer?
I don't know. There should be the League of Betrayers.
Betrayor from He-Man.
I was going to say that's a He-Man character.
So there was the big question I had reading this the whole time was, can it end well?
Which is always a trick.
Does he betray Jesus?
In the first issue, that had already happened.
Uh-huh. Spoilers.
But essentially, this final issue is sort of represents a final sort of confrontation of sorts. That I think the idea being that if Jesus, when he had to take on all of the sins of man when he died, meant he also had to experience the damnation of hell.
Yeah.
Which means that Judas gets to meet him again in this, and that had actually sort of occurred in the previous issue, but there's a lot of final stuff in this issue it's hard to describe without sort of giving away what happens.
Is it a lot like that Sam and Ralph cartoon where there's like the sheepdog and the wolf, and they're like, morning Sam, morning Ralph, morning Jesus, morning Judas?
Okay.
You're right.
Where your head's at.
I can't.
Farthest conceivable thing from that. This is actually a pretty deep spiritual thing that with sort of not quite the Garth Ennis type guys sitting around and talking, but something of that sort of transcendental kind of. Conversations and thoughts about two guys whose lives are so entwined as Judas and Jesus, and there is a really clever idea on the part of the writer that figures in another biblical story, and
what is it?
Wildly sacrilegious if you are a fundamentalist, I'm gonna say, but if you're open-minded, it's a neat idea. It actually has to do with Abraham and his son. Does not, there's no way I can sort of tell people why it's relevant in this. So it doesn't hurt to say it. It's an interesting, new interpretation of that. And it affects all the other stuff afterwards. Mm-hmm. And where things end up in hell. But yeah, it's a good cathartic sort of ending. It's, if I were a religious person, it was the kind of story where I might read this and think, I kind of like this idea. I hope this is how it happened. that this was what happened to Judas, and this is what his betrayal meant, and this is how it played out. Lots of interesting ideas. I would hope anybody might want to check it out or pick up the trade.
Nice. Right. Both my picks are from last week. Or no, I lied. One of my picks from last week. Both my picks are Doctors. My pick from last week is my pick, Doctor Star and the Kingdom of Lost Tomorrows, which is from the world of Black Hammer. It is Jeff Lemire and artist Max Fumera, who, what has he done, Nick?
He did Four Eyes. With Joe Casey, I believe.
There is Joe Kelly.
Joe Kelly.
There's spectacular artwork in this. There's a two-page spread of the title character doing his, like...
calculations and stuff?
Building his technology, building his super technology. And it is really, really beautiful. It's got, like, backdrops of blueprints of all this stuff. And it shows him working on a chalkboard and building gear and all this kind of stuff. And
you know what it reminded me of? I think because did Dave Stewart color this, I think?
It is possible. No. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He did.
It reminded me of, like, you know, we've seen so many amazing artists on the Hellboy side projects, all in the BPDRD and stuff.
Yeah.
And,
Femira has done that as well.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, this looks as good as any of those. Yeah.
So this takes place, it's the story is being told in 1941, 1942. It is about a scientist who gets funded by the United States government to basically create this super powerful technology. He becomes a Starman. The nods to Starman, the 90s series, could not be more on the nose. The character actually is named Dr. Jim Robinson,
right,
which James Robinson wrote the Starman series. But whereas that story was about the son and was about sort of the effects that his father had on these two boys, this is about the father and the effect that he had on his son, and the way that they tie the son back in is really interesting. It's all has him narrating and sort of basically talking to his son and regretting the choice he made to become sort of a superhero instead of being a father and husband. It's really well done. It's not directly tied into the story of Black Hammer and its notions, but thematically it ties in with what they do in the Black Hammer universe.
Presumably, I suspect that a lot of these things will end up having somewhat bigger ties than we expect.
Yeah.
Like, something in this will end up becoming relevant to how the characters return, if they ever do in Black Hammer, or he will show up in there. But it might just be world-building. I don't know. Like, I don't know how Jeff Lemire intends to kind of run the Black Hammer universe.
I'll say this with Lemire. I don't think you need to read Black Hammer to read Dr. Star. In fact, I think you'll pick up just as much as if you haven't.
Yeah. If you just wanted to read a really interesting story about a 1940s-era superhero, that's the personal story.
I think the Black Hammer universe actually reminds me of... I think James Robinson was probably a fairly big influence on Lemire.
Yeah.
Because it is basically... It's clearly loves its superheroes, clearly loves the notion of sort of silver and the golden age, but at the same time, it is about sort of the human cost of being superheroes, and that kind of thing is not always my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like it doesn't belong there, but it's done really well. The affection for the genre comes through, as does the sort of stronger character work, and it's some of my favorite comics, and this is no exception.
I really liked it too, and you know, the first issue of Black Hammer, as we've talked about, when I read it on its own without any other context or any second issue to read,
mm-hmm.
I was like, this is very well written, but I don't want more dark superhero stories.
Yeah.
But it's much more than that, mm-hmm. and like you said, the affection comes through so that it ends up being a deeper story that's is not actually just gloomy superheroes.
So you would say that in this case, Randy was right.
And this one time, this one was the one time you were right. Yeah, you're right.
All right, my other Doctor pick is Doctor Strange number 387, and this is this week's issue, which is Doctor Strange basically having a run-in with a character I was very surprised and pleased to see, and he's in the. But mostly I want to talk about Doctor Strange Damnation, the story that is going to be Donny Cates' final Doctor Strange story, and I really have enjoyed this story. Damnation is going to be a mini-series. The Doctor Strange series is weaving in and out of it. Basically, what happens is Doctor Strange got essentially his godlike powers back, granted to him by Loki, as a part of his deal of getting the Sorcerer Supreme back. And the first thing he decided to do was to go to Las Vegas and to raise it from the dead after what had happened during the Secret Empire story.
Sounds like a bad what Hal Jordan tried to do when Star City or Coast City?
Yeah, Coast City.
Coast City.
It goes
got
about
killed.
Exactly as well, because when he brings it back, Mephisto comes and opens this giant devil casino and says, "Hey, all these souls were mine and you just took them back, so I'm going to just come to Earth and get them." So now there's this giant devil casino. Hell is basically on Earth in Las Vegas, and the most minor of sins is being punished by all the demons, and they're being turned into Ghost Riders. So the Avengers who came out to help Doctor Strange, Thor, Captain Marvel, some of those powerful Avengers, they, whatever their minor sins are, they became Ghost Riders, and they now are in the service of Mephisto. And so Doctor Strange has to deal with that. He's basically trying, he was gambling with Mephisto, did not work out so well. He got his legs broken by a Ghost Rider Thor. And so Wong went out and recruited this group of damned or dead people, which includes Iron Fist, Dr. Voodoo, Blade, Swamp Thing, Moon Knight, and Bloodstone, Elsa Bloodstone.
Weird.
And he's coming to rescue the Doctor. And this is all about what's going on with Doctor Strange while Wong puts that team together. It's, like I say, the character, I don't want to give away who the character is, but it's a old Doctor Strange favorite I was glad to see. There's a couple of other heavy hitters who show up. And nothing is quite what it appears. It's also got beautiful, beautiful art by Nico Henriksen, who I think we first saw on that
Animal
Pride of Baghdad.
Yeah.
From Brian K. Vaughan.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm really liking... I'm not as into his Thanos, but I'm really liking what Donny Cates is doing with Doctor Strange right now, and I think this is a really interesting story. Dave, what's your backup pick?
My backup pick is a seedy story about my a cartoonist in Miami. It's called Dry County.
Is he recruited into an espionage organization?
No, is that a thing?
Oh, you're talking about Bendis's comic artist being dragged into.
Nope, he's recruited into a bad relationship.
Ah.
This seems like a slice of life comic. I'm going to guess this is at least semi-autobiographical. It's from Rich Tomasso, who, among other things, has done Spy Seal,
mm-hmm.
What looked to me like a sort of Tintin-esque drawn animal detective comic that I thought looked neat but didn't interest me. And I haven't read any of the other stuff he's done. He did
Dark Corridor and She-Wolf.
Okay,
and he has previously done a bunch of stuff for I think Drawn and Quarterly.
What this reminded me of is when I've read some of Ed Brubaker's old autobiographical comics from when he did that, I believe, compiled under A Complete Lowlife.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's not that this guy is necessarily a lowlife, it's just that this story is slightly seedy. He's a single cartoonist, for a newspaper cartoonist who's living in Miami. Kind of hates being around people, but is also, like, he'll go out to a club and then be like, oh, right, I hate people. And and then he goes, while he's doing laundry in his apartment one day, he kind of falls, he hits it off with this girl and falls for her. And then they start hanging out. And things are going well, but then he sort of finds out her backstory, that she's living with an ex who was shielding her from, like, an abusive boyfriend, but now they've been together for a while, and, like, they're not into each other anymore, and she doesn't know what to do, and she doesn't want to move when the guy moves, and he's trying to decide whether... because our lead guy has been single for a while and wants to... he definitely wants to hook up with her, but he's not sure if he wants to get involved in all this drama. Honestly, that's the story in a lot of ways. There are some actual twists and turns, but it's a full-on slice of life thing. It's beautifully drawn. I don't know quite what to say other than, like, sort of Fantagraphic style color version of, was it Love and Rockets? But this guy also has a style that I could even have seen, like, at times, wouldn't you say, Nick, on, like, BPRD or Hellboy or one of those things?
No.
Because they had a... Who's that minimalist artist? Paul Grist?
Yeah.
He did some Hellboy stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this guy has something in common with Paul Grist, too.
Yeah, I could see that.
Let's see. There is actually some, despite the somewhat serious storyline and the kind of mopey storyline, there's a bit of a shot in the arm when the guy's kind of loudmouth friend comes and hangs out, and he's like, no chick's worth all of this headache, and just, like, they hang out and drink. And it's kind of, it's got that kind of Garth Ennis vibe of, to bring him up again, of, this was a surprisingly easy read, everything in here. All of it was kind of chill and relaxed. Darkly funny sometimes. I don't know. I liked it. I liked it a lot more than I expected. I wasn't going to read this at all, and I read a few pages and liked it. Nick?
My alt pick is X-Men Blue number 23. Basically, new start for the book in a lot of ways. The time-displaced X-Men are gone. They're stuck in space somewhere. And this sort of picks up with people who we have left, like Polaris and Magneto and Ultimate Wolverine's son, Jimmy, and the vampire variant of Storm, Bloodscream, and sort of kind of hits all the buttons for me with the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pieces on the board with the Hellfire Club doing incursions into Madripoor, White Queen involved, the 90s guide me, like seeing Bastion.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah, Havoc is involved. There's a Sebastian Shaw shows up. There's another X-Men villain that shows up at the end that I thought was fantastic. So, I mean, Colin Bunn is sort of hitting all the high notes for, I guess, 90s and above era X-Men, and kind of distilling it into new fashion, because I really like what he's doing. And especially Jorge Molina's artwork is just kind of slick and beautiful and just kind of perfect. So, yeah, it kind
of... Bud's interesting. He's, I don't like everything he does for Marvel and DC by any means.
No.
But he's had any number of projects that I've ended up liking. You know, it's just kind of case by case. But yeah, Colin, he can do some really good stuff.
Yeah. Other things on my list this week, Punisher 222, the penultimate issue of the Punisher War Machine arc. Old Man Logan number 36 sees Old Man Logan run afoul of the new mayor of New York, Wilson Fisk. And as you might imagine, that doesn't quite go so well. So, you know, Bullseye gets involved.
Is Old Man Logan going to go away now that Wolverine's back?
I don't think so.
That's weird.
There'll be Old Man Logan and Young Man
They're
Logan.
So close in personality that they're basically the same dude except different hair colors.
Yeah, and Girl Logan.
See, Girl Logan is significantly different.
And Young Boy Logan. That's the kid.
And I don't know if...
Well, now there's Young Boy Logan because he's Jimmy from his son from the Ultimate World.
Tattooed Logan.
All those people are significantly different except for Old Man Logan and Logan.
Yeah. No, I always thought it was weird to have Old Man Logan in the Marvel Universe. I'd be happy to have Logan replace him, but no, I think he's probably going to stick around.
Marvel 2-in-1 sees Johnny and Ben and... their super scientist who's super snarky.
I like their super scientist a lot.
She's pretty fun. I think believe her name is Rachna, is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right.
And I love seeing Alicia Masters. I kind of like the supporting cast of the FF.
I like their dimension traveling outfits. Who does the art on this?
This is Valero Shiti.
Okay, because she took over from...
It was Jim Chung.
This? Jim Chung was doing this.
Yeah.
And I think Shiti's design for the sort of traveling...
Yep.
Those are good costumes.
Those are really good designs.
And they wind up in an alternate universe, which is super cool and has some fun ideas.
Yep, and a fun FF group kind of... and seeing where the pieces fall.
Yeah, this book's been really fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what is in store for the FF, because they've sort of written... Zdarsky's kind of written them into a corner where they need to find the other members of the FF. But we'll see. Avengers 684, a big Marvel character returns. So if you like that, we also learned the
true... cover is kind of a giveaway, can we say?
The cover is a giveaway. Hulk shows back up.
Yeah.
There's some... fallout between...
That's right, Hulk's been dead for a bit, huh?
A little bit. He's shown up, like, once before, but not, like, in... He showed up in Secret Empire briefly.
But how? I mean, or is this, like, that's, like, what's going on in here?
Because
last I knew, Hawkeye had put an arrow in his head and he was dead.
There's a little bit of that. And there's actually the conversation between Clint and Bruce on why that needs to happen, which I thought was interesting. But, yeah... There's also, we finally figure out who Voyager is and what's her deal. New issue of DC Sideways, the second issue of that, sort of the...
Their teleporter.
Teleporter, new teleporter. It's interesting. I liked the first issue. This one sort of, he's on the run from this dimensional entity that is sort of out to get him. Then runs across his friend and runs across another... person who's got powers in the hospital. So there's some interesting stuff. Detective Comics 976, jumping on point for a new story arc called Batman Eternal, focusing sort of on the fallout of a bunch of the stuff that's happened, Clayface's death, what that's done to Cassandra Cain, Batwoman and her joining forces with her father again and becoming the head of his organization and dragging along a lot of the members of Batman's team.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Tim Drake going through some growing pains as well. Despicable Deadpool 296, which has Captain America versus Deadpool. Astonishing X-Men number 9. Proteus's plans come to sort of fruition. There's a New Mutants book called Dead Souls. It's a miniseries that has Magic heading a new team with more of a supernatural bent to it. And I think that is all that I've got. Dave, what else do you got?
Not a ton for me this week. I guess there's another horror Archie comic called Vampironica, in which Veronica becomes a vampire, as you might guess. And Image had a book that I only got a chance to kind of glance at, but looked a little interesting, called Infidel. That's about a Muslim woman and her non-Muslim husband, and it was actually, there was some really good, well-written slice of life stuff in the first few pages I read, and really stunningly beautiful art. When I say beautiful, it kind of is like that, a little bit, who's it, Sean Phillips, who draws,
Killer Be Killed?
Killer Be Killed, yeah. Sean Phillips, and similar to him and a few of those other kind of edgier realists. But there is definitely something weird and maybe supernatural about it, and it had some very creepy moments in it too. And so I'm gonna give this the full read later, but I would recommend folks might check out Infidel. Just at a glance, it looked pretty good. Randy, you got anything?
Yeah. So on my list, X-Men Red number 2. I'm really liking this. It's probably my favorite X-Men book, and that's quite a lot to say since I've been loving X-Men Gold. All New Wolverine number 32. Which is a one-shot featuring Wolverine and one of the Orphans of X going and seeking revenge on a Nazi-leaning politician.
Yep.
And this does feature Nazi stomping boots. It's a fantastic issue. Has an artist, Duval Morissette Fan, who I don't know, but who I really like and I expect to see more of. This is a good one-shot before we lead into the Old Woman Old Woman Laura story that's going to start next issue. Star Wars Thrawn number 2, which is pretty fun. Lockjaw number 1 from a couple weeks ago, which features D-Man, one of my favorite characters. And features Lockjaw, another favorite character. And then Boom had a book called Dodge City, which is about professional dodgeball. It's in the vein of stuff like Fence and Heavy Vinyl and that kind of thing. So if you like that kind of thing, you might like this kind of thing. Spider King number 1, which is about Vikings versus aliens and has really, really beautiful artwork in... I'd almost call it a Jeff Smith style, sort of cartoony, but there's more. It's almost a little Paul Mayberry too. It's really pretty. Mage number 7, still really enjoying that. And then there's this book from last week called The Highest House, which is this big double-sized, like oversized issue, not like oversized like page count. It's magazine like magazine format. Yeah. This is by Mike Carey and Peter Gross. It is in a sort of a fantasy world where this slaver comes to town and buys a bunch of slaves, and it focuses on one of the boys who is sold into slavery and maybe has this sort of gift. And there's a hint that maybe there's a there was some kind of war where the gods were eliminated and now there's just the one goddess, but that this maybe this highest house where this boy has been taken, that maybe this powerful family is still worshiping the old gods, and there's some elements of maybe magic has been wiped out, but maybe it's still there. It's a fascinating read. It's got beautiful, beautiful artwork, and I was really taken with it. I like it. Want to see what they're doing next.
Well, that had a pretty good, serious kind of, not Game of Thrones in its kind of like blood and violence and stuff like that, but that sort of serious fantasy building.
Yeah, I can see that.
World building.
All right, that about wraps it up for us this week. When you hear our Yo Joe, the next thing you hear will be Jarek's glorious Roguecast anthem.
Yeah. While you're listening to it, Google images of G.I. Joe online. And
if you can sync it up, Pink Floyd style, Pink Floyd the Wall style, or Dark Side of the Moon style, pull up the 1986 G.I. Joe movie opening.
Yep. It should be beat for beat.
And it should be beat for beat. So just put it on mute, it'll play right along.
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty cool. You'll get to see G.I. Joe guys punching Cobra while we do this.
Yep. All right, and with that,
Yo Joe!
Here come those three guys, one even talk about board games? No, it is the same. The Rogue Cast. What's up with comics? Should you see that movie? What's going on with Dave's hair? The rogues are there. Nothing like this show. Pretty soon you'll know. Then they tell you why. Talking comics filled with pride. They sign off with this cry.
Yo, Joe!
The Rogue Cast.
Cultural Radar.
Randy, Nick, and Dave. The Rogue Cast.
Cultural Radar.
Randy, Nick, and Dave. What's up with comics? Should you see that movie? What's going on with Dave's hair? The rogues are there.
The official podcast of Rogue-Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. Its purpose is to tell you the best comics, games, and other things on our pop cultural radar. And fight Cobra.
The Rogue-Gallery. What's up with comics? Should you see that movie? What's going on with Dave's hair? The rogues are there.
The Rogue Cast.